Greetings and welcome to the 14th podcast in the Energy Links podcast series. I'm your host, Paul Rippey, and I'm here via Skype with Asif Dalla. Asif Dalla is a professor of economics at St. Mary's College of Maryland. Professor Dalla is an expert on microfinance who has published numerous journal articles on aspects of microfinance, such as leasing, savings mobilization, and social capital. In 1997, Professor Dalla received a fellowship to spend a year on sabbatical at Grameen Bank. And out of that experience came his book on Grameen Bank, The Poor Always Pay Back, The Grameen 2 Story. And that book is already in its second printing and has been translated into Chinese, Bahasa Indonesian, and French. Recently, Professor Dalla was awarded the Norton Dodge Award for Excellence in Teaching by St. Mary's College and was named the Hilda C. Landers Endowed Professor in the Liberal Arts. And especially germane to this podcast series, Asif Dalla is the author of the recently published monograph on climate change and microfinance, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Asif Dalla, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Paul.
And a good place to begin this conversation would be if you could tell us how that article came about. How did you come to write Climate Change and Microfinance?
Well, I think the motivation came from my surprise. Climate change was not in the radar screen of the microfinance industry. Even in Bangladesh, which has the highest penetration of microfinance in the world, about 30 million households by conservative estimate, the industry there did not participate in NAPA, what is called National Adaptation Plan of Action. These are plans that countries, in consultation with civil society, which microfinance is part of that civil society, is supposed to prepare, which will help guide the countries about different measures they can take to adapt to the climate change. So that's the purpose. That's how I came about. And then I approached the Grameen Foundation, and they were nice enough and kind enough to provide the funding. As you can guess, the views expressed here is mine and does not reflect the opinion of Grameen Foundation and Oxfam USA.
And in the article, you talk about the impact of climate change on MFIs and their clients. Could you elaborate on that?
Yes, I think I'll start with a quotation from Lord Stern, who was the author of the famous paper on economics of climate change that was funded by the British Treasury. And Lord Stern was giving a talk in D.C., and he has this famous good line that I thought I should use. It says that climate change begins and ends with human. So I think that before I talk about how climate change is going to affect microfinance, I should start talking about the clients of the microfinance. The reason climate change will affect microfinance is through its effect on its clients. I mean, if you read the science, if you read the prediction, climate change will increase the intensity of natural events such as floods, cyclones, and obviously clients of microfinance depends on nature for most of their livelihoods. And this sort of uncertainty and volatility in the nature will obviously affect their livelihood and most importantly, their income stream, which means that they will not be able to make repayment on time for the microfinance institution. So we should expect that microfinancing institutions will face higher defaults. Some of them might face serious repayment crisis. A lot of the microfinancing institutions have huge exposure to the livestock industry. And again, the science pointed out that there will be much higher mortality of the livestock. So all the loans that you have made against livestock will become vulnerable.
The other issue, of course, is client refugees and people who will have to leave where they are, either because of flooding, drought, or invasive diseases or pests. Could you talk about the issues in Bangladesh?
Yes, obviously, Bangladesh is really a personal issue for me. As you know, I'm from Bangladesh. I still have families there, even though I'm a U.S. citizen right now. Bangladesh is one of those frontline countries. If you look at all the prediction from IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, it shows that about 20% of Bangladesh, the southern side of Bangladesh, will actually go under because of the sea level rise. And you're talking about 30 million people they have to move. And there are already these sort of changes are happening on the southern side, especially some place called Sundarbans, which is the place where the Royal Bengal Tigers live. A lot of people are basically becoming climate refugees. They're trying to cross the border across, go to India. And India is already building a big wall like we have on the southern side of our country with Mexico. So what will happen in Bangladesh is that a large number of people will be affected and they will have to go someplace. And only God knows where.
You give some specific advice in the article to MFIs, and you talk about climate-proofing financial products. That's a good phrase. But what do you mean by that? And specifically, how can an MFI climate-proof its loan products?
By climate-proofing, I mean trying to dampen the impact of climate changes. Obviously, we'll never be able to completely climate-proof your products and your institution. So it's trying to dampen the effects. Take, for example, how to climate-proof your loan products. Well, if you believe all the prediction that the scientists are telling us and the natural changes, which means that there will be volatility, variance on the income of the consumers. Now, take a standard loan product of MFIs. It's usually 1 year. You have fixed installment that you have to repay, 26 repayment or 52, depending on the MFIs you're talking about. Now, this fixed, rigid, one-year fixed repayment would not work under climate change because some month you will have higher income, another month you will have lower income. So you need to introduce flexibility. The second thing you have to do, obviously, is institutionalize rescheduling, because if the client face, not one, we're talking about large number of clients face these kind of problems, you have to allow them to reschedule their loans. And Grameen, that's one of the things that came out of Grameen 2, which was basically influenced by its experience of dealing with the flood of the major flood of 1997 that Grameen Bank have now allowed under Grameen 2 to for the installment payment to fluctuate. You could stack a deal, and then if you get in trouble with the repayment, you can go out and work out a rescheduling of your loans. So that's what I mean by climate proofing.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll talk with Asif Dalla about specific ways that MFIs can reduce the impact of climate change on their clients and on themselves as institutions.
Hurry up! Fight for peace, yes, peace that we need. Too many die, too much mouth to feed. Total peace for the good of the kids. Why punish them for what they never did? Forget the past and learn to forgive. Everything on heart has its own right to live. Whether you are black man or whether you are white, stop this and let us unite.
Welcome back. This is Paul Rippey, and I'm here with Asif Dalla, professor of economics at St. Mary's College in Maryland and author of Microfinance and Climate Change. Asif, you mentioned a number of specific actions that MFIs can take to reduce the impact of climate change.
What I'm suggesting is that, again, this is taking a cue from the Grameen Bank, which had long experience of dealing with floods in Bangladesh. What they have done is that they have created a disaster fund for each center or each branches. They even have, they have also developed funds at the headquarters levels. So that's what I'm suggesting, that some of the MFIs should start thinking about and start creating funds, maybe initially at the headquarters levels, that they can use this money to, when the disaster hits, like in a very high intensity floods or the droughts, they could use them to get people to restart their lives that has been devastated by some kind of natural disaster. And so that's what I'm talking about.
And then you also talk about carbon markets. I think we're just beginning to see some of the large, really professional MFIs touch into carbon markets. And I know Grameen Shakti, I believe, was the first MFI-related institution to get money through the CDM mechanism. But there are not a lot of them. And, of course, Copenhagen is going on now, and we don't know what's really going to happen to carbon markets. But hopefully they'll grow. But do you think MFIs really have a role in getting carbon money, or is this too optimistic?
Well, I think Grameen Shakti, as you mentioned, is a good example, with the caveat that Grameen Shakti is not an MFI, but it kind of uses the same MFI technique. In other words, for a family to get a solar home system, you have to put some down payment, 20%. Rest of them is funded by same kind of installment mechanism, and they're using the network. So I think that's a good test case for other MFIs to do.
Right. Of course, they have scale that so few MFIs.
Right. Absolutely.
And I certainly would agree. Their model is right. I mean, MFIs themselves should not be, they probably shouldn't be doing solar installations or selling solar lamps, but they certainly have a role in the process. One of the huge advantages of MFIs that right. is just their outreach. We've worked so hard to get such outreach, and I always say, let's use it.
The other opportunity is for MFIs to take CDM. As you're saying, it's going to be tough for smaller MFIs, which does not have the skill and the technical expertise to take advantage of. But MFIs should be able to take advantage of the voluntary offset markets, because a lot of people in the Western countries are conscientious and they want to buy out their carbon footprint. One of the problems with the voluntary offset market is that there has been a lot of allegation of fraud and not properly done, but MFIs, which are widely respected, can take advantage and can basically create a niche market and take advantage of that. And as you know, you have already done a podcast with April Aldrich, the microenergy, and that's the kind of market that they're trying to get in between the MFIs and people in the West who want to buy off their carbon footprint, and there could be some intermediary who can take advantage of these opportunities.
Very good point. And so I guess we could also just take this opportunity to say to our listeners that it's if you want to offset your carbon footprint and through the voluntary market, make sure that you are doing that with an institution that has some sort of independent certification, such as Gold Standard.
Yes.
And then you talk about the importance of information sharing, and that's what we're doing right now, and I completely agree. The fact is, MFIs are out there, and I've worked in MFIs. I know how preoccupied they get with the daily business of what I used to call moving the money around. It's hard for them to take the time to inform themselves on climate change, even though climate change might be the most important issue that any of them face. And I've said to MFIs, if your strategic plan doesn't address climate change, it's time to redo your strategic plan. What advice do you have for MFIs that would like to learn more and would like to think strategically about climate change?
Well, first thing, they should read my paper.
Right. Read Asif's paper.
Right. But all joking aside, I think that...
I'm not joking. I'm serious. Read his paper.
Right. You are absolutely correct that, I mean, that's one of the reasons, even though I told you that I was surprised that MFIs, the climate change is not their radar screen, because they are dealing with the day-to-day business of moving the money around. But people like us and you who have this information, we can always share this information with them. And with the advance of internet, I think they can get this information by themselves. I think that MFIs do not have to reinvent the wheel. What they have to do is that if they just look around, they will find that communities or people who have noticed this change in the weather pattern, they're already doing some adaptation on their own. What the MFIs have to basically take these good practices and then disseminate that information. And second thing, they will be should be a catalyst or a change agent to scale up some of the successful examples. And I think that foundations and friends of MFIs could also be a good source of for the MFIs to get the necessary information. And as you mentioned, every chance you get, you tell the MFIs that climate change should be part of their strategic plan. We just have to keep on repeating this until enough people listen to us.
Yes, I really like what you said. And let me just rephrase this to sort of underline the point. I think sometimes Northerners like us, The best thing we can do is listen to the collective intelligence of the people who are directly grappling with issues on a daily basis, find out what they're doing that's working, and like you say, be the catalyst or something, or be the agents that help spread the good ideas that are developed sometimes by the very people that we are trying to assist. Asif, what's next for you in life? Do you have any more publications coming down the pipeline?
Well, I think that, I mean, I had a work that I did about how an MFI can are providing social safety net, obviously using the example of Grameen Bank.
Yeah.
And some of them have to do with insurance and then the disaster plan and all of that, how essentially what the government should have been doing, what an MFI, which is obviously has the scale of Grameen Bank, which believes that they should be providing all kinds of financial services for their clients, are also has become an agent of providing safety net. And so I've done some work, but I think that now I want to get out of basically concentrating on Grameen Bank only. I want to talk about the sector much more broadly. One of the things that is missing from the paper is gender aspect of it, which I didn't address much. So I think the next thing I want to extend some of this work a little bit more practically. And I'm really excited about, which is in the paper, about all these new products that are coming up that have been piloted all over Africa and Malawi and Ethiopia and Kenya, the index-based insurance. So I want to see what comes out of this and how can we help MFIs to adopt some of these new products and help them to scale up. So that's what I think that I'm that's what the future looks like for me.
Asif Dalla, congratulations on your paper. And it does help raise consciousness and understanding of what I think is the most important issue of this century. So thanks very much for being on the show. The music at the break was Give Peace a Chance, as performed by Aerosmith and featuring Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars on a record called Instant Karma and Amnesty International record benefiting Darfur. So check that out, actually. It has great covers of songs by John Lennon, who died 29 years ago this month. And this is Paul Rippey saying goodbye. Look for another podcast soon. And in the meantime, may all your energy be clean.
The Energy Links podcast is brought to you by the Academy for Educational Development Field Project, www.fieldsupportlowa.org/energylinks, and the Center for Financial Inclusion at Action International, www.action.org/center. With the generous assistance of the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, and the Wallace Global Foundation. Of course, the views expressed are not necessarily those of the sponsors. Your comments and questions are welcome. Please send them to energylinks2009@gmail.com.